of the banana tree, on the rugged trail to on the balcony. A child of the 20th century, a dried up Goliath and a weasel named Fee. Far away in another place, a fading beauty named Lily Grace, a gospel singer with pox on her face and a bamboo cane to help her keep the pace. Past the age of maturity, someday he knew it would set him free, like it did for Floyd, the chimpanzee.
Floyd, you're trying to live a life that's completely free. You're racing with the wind, you're flirting with death. So have a cup of coffee and catch your breath. So have a cup of coffee and catch your breath. Thank you.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, he wanted to go to the Capitol on January 6th, Donald Trump tells the Washington Post, but Secret Service wouldn't let him. He hated the violence and was furious Nancy Pelosi wasn't putting a stop to it. He doesn't remember getting many phone calls, and he didn't destroy any call logs. Trump would lie on credit when he could tell the truth for cash. So why are so many pundits invested in suggesting that he can never be legally brought to account? We'll hear from Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, about the stunning new ruling that shows a way to do just that. Also on the show, polls show 68% of people in the country think marijuana should be legal, the highest number since polling started in 1969. The tide is turning. It's just a matter of who we let be lifted by it and who we allow to drown. Should some people get rich selling weed while others rot in jail for it? That's what the MORE Act that just passed the House tries to address. We'll catch up with an expert on marijuana legislation, Mike Lazuski from the Enact Group. That's coming up, but first a look back at some recent press. The confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court occasions a look back at some of the media coverage of her hearings. While media reported GOP senators' grandstanding harassment and aggressive repetition of baseless accusations, their need to always be signaling balance led to some mealy-mouthed avoidance tactics, like C-SPAN's tweet describing, quote, heated exchange between Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and Senator Lindsey Graham on child pornography sentencing, close quote, when anybody watching would tell you that only one side was heated. Or this piece from the Washington Post in late March that begins, quote, as Ketanji Brown Jackson this week sat through several days of hearings in her bid to join the Supreme Court, Democrats proudly took turns reflecting on the historic example she sets and the need for the judiciary, much like other institutions, to better reflect the diverse public it serves. At the same time, some Republicans repeatedly suggested that the first black female high court nominee was soft on crime and questioned whether critical race theory, an academic framework centered on the idea that racism is systemic, influenced her thinking as a judge. Close quote. You might think this says, Democrats noted correctly that there are no black women on the Supreme Court, while Republicans showed part of the reason why, by inappropriately linking black people to crime and to their own weaponized rendering of an intellectual framework. For the Post, though, quote, the disparate treatment underscored the extent to which race hovered over the four grueling days of Jackson's confirmation hearings this week, serving as both a source of ebullience for the judge's supporters and an avenue for contentious questions that sometimes carried racial undertones, close quote. So it wasn't a series of racist attacks on a black woman in an attempt to deny her advancement. It was race itself hovering, both over those who want to see an end to decades of discriminatory exclusion and those who don't. And when Marsha Blackburn asked, is it your personal hidden agenda to incorporate critical race theory into our legal system? And Ted Cruz demanded to know if she thought babies were racist. Well, those would be some of those contentious questions with racial undertones, leading one to wonder what a racial overtone would look like. The word racist does appear in the piece in senators' own descriptions of the 1619 Project and critical race theory, and in reporters' own statement that, quote, Republican senators who would go on to question Jackson most aggressively acknowledged that they could be perceived as racist in doing so. Close quote. This sort of coverage may not come off as mean-spirited, but its purposive timidity and awkward even-handedness ultimately provide cover for ideas and tactics that should be ruthlessly exposed for what they are. The time to talk about race hovering over things is long past. And Counterspin mourns the death of Eric Bollert, who died in a bike accident this week at the age of 57. Bollert was a smart media observer and critic, most recently at his own site and newsletter, Press Run, before that at Salon, Rolling Stone, and Media Matters. You can find several interviews with Eric Bollard in the Counterspin archives, including one from back in 2006 on his book, Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. He'll be missed. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. When a judge, having seen confidential documents, declares the former president likely committed federal crimes in an unprecedented effort to overturn a Democratic election, how would you, as a media outlet, alert readers to the remarkable development? If you're USA Today, you choose the headline, "The January 6th Committee Got a Boost from a Ruling on a Confidential Memo," and describe the judge's ruling as, first of all, quote, "a win for the committee," close quote. Some media's insistence on treating the crisis represented by the January 6th coup attempt and the ongoing Stop the Steal disinformation campaign as a beltway spat is bizarre and disheartening. Fortunately, many others concur strongly with the thought expressed by U.S. District Judge David Carter in that ruling, quote, "If the country does not commit to investigating and pursuing accountability for those responsible, the court fears January 6th will repeat itself," close quote. Marjorie Cohn is professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and a former president of the National Lawyers Guild. She's author of a number of books, including Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. She joins us by phone from San Diego. Welcome back to Counterspin, Marjorie Cohn.
Thanks for having me, Janine.
Okay, this 44-page ruling from a federal judge, David Carter, was about whether Donald Trump's lawyer, John Eastman, an architect of January 6th, had to hand over documents to the House committee investigating it. Eastman said they were protected by attorney-client privilege, and it was in explaining why they should not be that Judge Carter provided what I've seen you and others describe as a roadmap to bringing charges against Trump and potentially others as well. Is that correct?
That is correct, Janine. Eastman was claiming that he and Trump shared the attorney-client privilege and also what is called the work product doctrine, which would shield them concealing, basically, communications that had to do with criminal activity on January 6th. Well, there's a crime fraud exception to both the work product doctrine and the attorney-client privilege. And that basically says that if the communications are made in furtherance of illegality, illegal activity, then the attorney-client privilege and the work product doctrine don't apply and he has to turn over the documents. And in discussing that issue, Judge Carter found that it was more likely than not that Trump attempted obstruction of an official proceeding and that Trump and John Eastman, his lawyer, committed conspiracy to defraud the United States. Those are two federal crimes. And even though Judge Carter was dealing with a civil case, as you said, about whether John Eastman should turn over documents to the January 6th committee of the House of Representatives, his finding that it was more likely than not that Trump committed these two federal crimes is basically equivalent to a finding of probable cause in a criminal case, probable cause to support an arrest. So my feeling is that Judge Carter's 44-page opinion provides a roadmap for the Department of Justice to bring criminal charges against Trump and Eastman. Although the January 6th committee can make a criminal referral to the Department of Justice, it can't actually bring criminal charges. And there is a federal grand jury that is investigating the January 6th events and possible culprits, and that the Department of Justice could go to the grand jury and say, we want an indictment of Trump for these two federal crimes.
Well, I can see folks maybe getting hung up on the phrase from the ruling, more likely than not. Trump is more likely than not to have committed these federal crimes. But that has a particular legal meaning. That's all he can say at this point, isn't it?
It is. In a civil case, the burden of proof is a preponderance of the evidence, or more likely than not, or 51%. In a criminal case, the burden of proving guilt, the prosecutor has the burden of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But that's once you get to the trial stage. But in a criminal case, in order to have a lawful arrest or an indictment, the prosecutor has to show probable cause to believe that the suspect committed the crime. And probable cause is basically equivalent to more likely than not, which was what Judge Carter found. And so there is plenty of evidence for the Department of Justice to request an indictment for the arrest of Trump and Eastman for federal crimes in a criminal case, basically.
Well, let me draw you out a little bit on the obstruction of an official proceeding, because one of the things that's interesting about that charge is that it requires corruption, not just that the individual obstructed, influenced, or impeded or attempted to an official proceeding, but that they did so corruptly. And I think that hangs a lot of people up because they say, you don't know what their intent was. You can't prove corruption there. But Carter says, we have other things that we can line up to indicate what he called a corrupt mindset.
Yes, and keep in mind that in a criminal case, it's rare that the defendant says, I had a guilty mind. I acted corruptly. I intended to kill the victim.
Right.
And that would be direct evidence. But there is a thing called circumstantial evidence, and that is just as strong and reliable in a criminal case as direct evidence. And what Carter concluded, basically, was that Trump knew that what he was doing was illegal, and Carter cited many, many opinions of federal court judges finding that there was no voter fraud. He cited the agency who is tasked with determining whether there's voter fraud, who concluded, no, there was no voter fraud. And Trump certainly knew that the plan was illegal. This is Eastman's plan to get Pence, Mike Pence, to either reject the electors or delay the vote count. That was the plan that constituted obstruction or attempted obstruction of an official proceeding. And then the conspiracy to defraud the United States was the agreement between Trump and Eastman to carry out this nefarious plan, which Judge Carter said both Trump and Eastman knew was illegal.
I think he also cited that call to Georgia Secretary of State Raffensperger when Trump asked him to find votes as showing that he was more interested in overturning the election and not actually investigating it. I've gotten frustrated by a tone in some reporting that suggests that we're probably never going to get anything to stick with Donald Trump, and so we shouldn't get excited about it. And I guess the implication is without an assured conviction, the whole thing is a waste of time or a distraction, or worst of all, it looks partisan. But, I mean, gosh, if this system can't determine Donald Trump guilty of anything at all, then I would think exploring why not would be journalists' job number one.
Well, I agree with you, Janine, and I think perhaps 30% of the people in this country are going to scream and yell if Trump is charged with a criminal offense, but the majority of people are in favor of the rule of law and holding Trump's feet to the fire, and the evidence of his criminal wrongdoing is legion. On Thursday, the Attorney General of New York asked a state judge to hold Trump in civil contempt for failing to comply with a court order in an investigation about whether the Trump Organization unlawfully falsified the value of assets for financial gain. And Trump's wrongdoing is out there for all to see. It has been documented for more than a year, really. And bringing criminal charges when there is probable cause to believe that Trump committed federal crimes is what the law requires. when I was a criminal defense attorney, I would have loved to hear people say, well, the prosecutor isn't assured of a conviction, so shouldn't bring criminal charges against your client. That's not how our system works. The criminal justice system, if it is indeed just, means that when there's probable cause that a crime has been committed, then the prosecutor should bring criminal charges, and then it's up to a jury to decide whether that defendant is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
Do you have any thoughts for journalists who are going to be taking this up? We didn't even get to the 10 minutes of, or however many minutes of tape that no one can find, or the papers taken out of the White House or shoved down the toilet. I mean, and yet it doesn't seem to be building to the story of the scale that it needs to, at least from my view. It's not that it's not being covered. There are stories here and stories there and stories virtually every day, but I'm not sure that it's getting the push, giving the gravity, maybe is the word, that it needs. But let me ask you, advice to journalists who are going to be covering this one way or another over the next weeks, months?
I would pay attention to the White House telephone logs that the Select Committee has received, showing a gap of 7 hours and 37 minutes on January 6th, which was the time that the pro-Trump mob stormed the Capitol and committed the insurrection, or the attempted insurrection. Trump initiated at least one call on a White House phone that was not recorded on the call log. Keep in mind that Richard Nixon resigned in infamy because of 18 minutes missing from the White House tapes about the Watergate scandal. And it may well be that the bigger story here is Trump's cover-up of his criminal activity, just like during the Watergate scandal. I think it's important to pay attention to what the Select Committee uncovers. I think they've called or interviewed 800 witnesses. Most recently, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner.
Right.
We'll see what happens.
All right, then. We've been speaking with Marjorie Cohn. She's professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and author of, among other titles, Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues from Olive Branch Press. You can find her work on Truth Out, and you can also keep up with it at MarjorieCohn.com. Marjorie Cohn, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me, Janine.
The image of marijuana a visitor might get from U.S. media and popular culture is that the stigma is gone. Tons of people admit to using or having used it, and it's practically legal, right? It's true, access to medical marijuana is now legal in most states, and 18 states, plus D.C. and Guam, now allow access for adult use. But according to Drug Policy Alliance, marijuana laws are still responsible for some 500,000 arrests a year, with, no points for guessing, black and brown people disproportionately impacted. Indeed, black people are almost four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than white people, despite equal rates of consumption. And it's a leading cause of, or excuse for, deportation. Marijuana prohibition continues to ruin lives and livelihoods, which is why, if the MORE Act that recently passed in the House had only descheduled marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act, it would be a lot less meaningful. We're joined now by a leading expert on marijuana laws in the U.S. Mike Lazuski is founder and principal at the Enact Group. He joins us now by phone. Welcome to Counterspin, Mike Lazuski.
Hi, Janine. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's being shorthanded everywhere as decriminalizing pot, but the legislation is called the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act for a reason. Could you give listeners a sense of the overall intentions or aims of this bill? They're integrated, aren't they?
Yes, it's a real comprehensive approach to marijuana reform. It's built on some bills that were introduced by some of our longtime champions like Earl Blumenauer and Barbara Lee, who have really tried to make sure that the issue of marijuana isn't just about legalization and the industry, but making sure that the communities that have been harmed the most by the racially disproportionate impact and enforcement of our marijuana laws are really at the center of our marijuana policy moving forward. So The MORE Act, in addition to ending federal criminalization, it would set up a robust system for expungement. So there would be automatic expungements for certain marijuana offenses at the federal level, and there would also be funding to help effectuate expungements at the state level. A lot of states have begun to do their own expungement efforts, but a lot of times where they run into trouble is there's not enough funding to make sure that they actually take place.
Right.
So the MORE Act would help it for both federal and state expungements. And then also it would impose a modest tax on the industry. It would start off at 5% at the wholesaler level, and it would gradually work up to about 8%. And that tax revenue would go in part to the expungements, but also to help repair the communities that have been most disproportionately impacted by our enforcement of marijuana laws. So it would fund job training, community services, public health, substance abuse prevention, all sorts of things that communities that have been most harmed by our drug war enforcement, where they could use some help. So it's a real comprehensive approach to ending federal marijuana prohibition and taking accountability for the harms that 50 years of marijuana prohibition, actually more, it's 50 years since the Controlled Substances Act went into effect. But our marijuana policy has been largely one of prohibition going back to the early 20th century.
Well, as we've said, many states have passed their own laws. You just started, I think, to touch on it. But why is the federal aspect important here? What's different at having this change happen at that level?
So it is key that the states are leading on marijuana reform, because most of the arrests do happen at the state level. But a lot of the reasons why we hear in states that haven't legalized yet is that it's still illegal federally, mm-hmm. and that as long as it's illegal federally, the powers that be in those states are reluctant to move forward. And that's why a lot of the marijuana reforms that you've seen so far, they've been in states that have ballot measures. There's only been a handful of states like Illinois and New York, Connecticut, that have actually done it through their legislatures. Virginia is another. And those have all been in recent years. So we're optimistic about the trend moving forward. But many of those states only legalized through their legislature after we passed the MORE Act the first time in the House. Mm-hmm. And that was in the lame duck session in 2020. So we weren't really able to do much after it passed. But we think that the, for lack of a better word, the symbolism of the federal government beginning, Congress beginning to show that it's going to be changing its marijuana policy at some point, has inspired these states to be bolder. So once the federal government legalizes, we would anticipate that many, many more states would follow through with that.
Well, this kind of follows on from that because, you know, there is a Senate companion bill that I think originally was introduced by Kamala Harris, right, when she was a senator, and had some support from high-profile folks, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker. But the word is right now, no way is this getting through the Senate. And I just wanted to ask, you know, having done this work for some time, why do groups take on efforts where the preliminary math says you won't get through? What are the other gains?
Well, the first thing I'll say to that is when we worked on the MORE Act in the House side back in 2019 and 2020, we were told, one, it would never come up for a vote. Two, if it did, we would lose. Mm-hmm. And we got it on the floor, and we ended up winning.
Right.
So there is the whole never say never aspect to this. We also recognize the realities of the Senate and that hardly anything is getting passed. But just because there's an uphill challenge there politically, we do have Leader Schumer, who's working on his own comprehensive bill with Senators Booker and Wyden, and we expect that to be introduced sometime in the coming weeks. We do have the majority leader backing our comprehensive bill, and so I think we're going to see a lot more progress in the Senate. One thing that this issue has experienced is the House is very well versed on this issue by now. Many House members have meant several votes on marijuana issues. We've either been to their offices or other organizations working on this issue have been to their offices. Just about everyone in the House is well-versed on this. The Senate really hasn't had to consider it. And so the introduction of Senator Schumer's comprehensive bill, the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act, when that comes out in a couple of weeks, that's really going to force the Senate to consider this issue like it never had before. So while we may not see a payoff in 2022 in terms of passing a bill, mm-hmm. it's a necessary step for us to get there eventually. So we think we're going to see significant progress in the Senate. We may start to see hearings on marijuana in various Senate committees. So I think while we may not get to where we want to end up in 2022, we're going to take several significant steps towards getting to that ultimate goal.
Finally, does it matter that Biden seems to be opposed in deed, if not in word?
It would be certainly we're frustrated with the Biden administration on marijuana so far. There was word that there was going to be clemency for marijuana prisoners. The Drug Policy Alliance would like to see everyone with drug offenses to be able to receive clemency. But the fact that the Biden administration didn't follow through even on just, you know, marijuana prisoners like they said they would, that's been disappointing. We've seen some other disappointing things from the White House in terms of security clearances. So we know that this isn't the most friendly administration on this issue, but we do think that if we have a bill that's supported by, you know, a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and if it was delivered to the president, we have confidence that we could get it in the law. So there are candidates who were better on this issue, but we do think that we can win Biden over.
And supported by the majority of the people in the country. Yeah, not for nothing, you know, who are meant to be informing.
Indeed. Right. Indeed.
Yeah. We've been speaking with Mike Lazuski of the Enact Group. Thank you so much, Mike Lazuski, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on our website, fair.org. That's also the place to sign up for our newsletter Extra or our Action Alert Network. It's also the place to show support for the show if you're so inclined. The show's engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
You are listening to 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh.
Tears, sea of heartbreak.
Sea of heartbreak.
to shore, back to your arms once more. Oh, come to my rescue. Come here to me. Take me and keep me away from the sea. Yes, the sea of a heartbreak. Love and loneliness, memories of your caress, so divine. How I wish you were mine again, my dear. I'm on the sea of tears, sea of a heartbreak. It's a sea of a heartbreak.
Well, I love a rainy night, I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Showers wash all my cares away. I wake up to a sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Ooh, ooh. I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. I love to hear the thunder, watch the lightning when it lights up the sky. You know it makes me feel good. Well, I love a rainy night, it's such a beautiful sight. I love to feel the rain on my face, taste the rain on my lips, in the moonlight shadows. Puts a song in this heart of mine, puts a smile on my face every time, 'cause I love a rainy. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Ooh, I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Ooh, ooh. Shadows wash all my. Sunny day, 'cause I love a rainy night. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. You can see it in my eyes. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, it makes me high. Ooh, I love a rainy night. You know I do. Yeah, yeah, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night. You can see it in my eyes. I love a rainy night. It makes me high. Well, I love a rainy night. And I love you too. Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. I love a rainy night.
Oh, my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. Well, I did a double take the day I met you. My heart turned to flip as I stood next to you. And I knew right there I never could forget you. For you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to
though you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat. You came in. Turn my cloudy skies from gray to blue. You're my sunshine that comes up every morning. Yes, you are my every dream come true. And my heart skips a beat when we walk down the street. I feel a trembling in my knees. And just to know you're mine until the end of time makes my heart skip a beat.
One fine day as I was walking down the street, spied a beggar man with rags upon his feet. Took a penny from my pocket in his tin cup, I did drop it, and I heard him say as I made my retreat, "May the bird of paradise fly up your nose, may an elephant caress you with his toes, may your wife be flagged with runners in her hose, may the bird of paradise fly up your nose." My laundry man is really on his toes. Found a $100 bill among my clothes. When he called me, I came running, gave him back his dime for phoning. And I heard him saying as I turned to go, "May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. May your wife be flagged with runners in her hose. May the bird of paradise fly up your nose." I was way behind one day to catch a train. The taxi driver said, "We'll make it just the same." A speed cop made it with us, and as he wrote out the ticket, I stood by politely waiting for my change. "May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. May your wife be plagued with runners in her hose. May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you."
Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like I never before. There's a speed zone ahead with all right. I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got me 10 forward gears on a Georgia overdrive. I'm taking little white pills and my eyes are open wide. I just passed a Jimmy in a white. I've been a passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. But it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some of the guys. I could find one to hold me tight, but I could never make my livers all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Way.
ICC is a checking on down the line. Well, I'm a little overweight and my logbook's way behind. But nothing bothers me tonight. I can dodge all the scales all right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, my rig's a little old, but that don't mean she's slow. There's a flame from her stack and that smoke's a-blowing black as coal. My hometowns are coming in sight. If you think I'm happy, you're right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been.
Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia, and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Up his case and he said, I'll start this show, and fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow, and he pulled the bow across the strings and it made a evil hiss, and then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. Finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done.
Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, there's your dog back, no child, no.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat, and he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. I done told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best as ever been. He played,
fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. A chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, where you don't fight, no child, no.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
giant pool of tears. And I've seen a lot of good folk die, had a lot of bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off of my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more. My woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more. Well, that foreman, he's a regular dog. The line boss, he's a fool. Got a brand new flat top haircut. Lord, he thinks he's cool. One of these days I'm gonna blow my top, and that sucker, he's gonna pay. Lord, I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more. A woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more. Take this job and shove it.
DJs knows that I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. Loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair. I guess he ain't read the signs that say I've been to prison. Someone ought to warn him before I knock him off his chair. 'Cause my long hair just can't cover up my redneck. I've won every fight I've ever fought, and I don't need some turkey telling me that I ain't country, saying I ain't worth a damn dough. Ticket that he bought, 'cause I can sing all them songs about Texas. And I still do all the sad ones that I know. They tell me I look like Merle Haggard and sound a lot like David Allen Coe. And the barmaid in the last town that we played in knew the words to every song I'd wrote. She said Jimmy Rabbit turned her on to my last album just about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, Johnny Cash helped me get out of prison long before Rodriguez stole that goat. I've been the Rhinestone Cowboy for so long I can't remember, and I can do you every song Hank Williams ever wrote. And I can sing all them songs about Texas. And I still do all the sad ones that I know. I can't help it, I look like Merle Haggard, and I sound a lot like David Allen Coe. But the country DJs all think I'm an outlaw, and they'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive.
I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home. Last night I went to sleep in Detroit City, and I dreamed about those cotton fields and home. I dreamed about my mother, dear old papa, sister and brother. I dreamed about that girl who's been waiting for so long. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, how I wanna go home. Home folks think I'm big in Detroit City, from the letters that I write they think I'm fine. But by day I make the cards, by night I make the bars. If only they could read between the lines. 'Cause you know, I rode a freight train north to Detroit City, and after all these years I find I've just been wasting my time. So I just think I'll take my foolish pride and put it on a southbound freight and ride. Go on back to the loved ones, the ones that I left waiting so far behind. I wanna go home. I wanna go home. Oh, I want.
Wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
hello walls. Hot things go for you today. Don't you miss her? Since she upped and walked away, and I'll bet you dread to spend another lonely night with me. But lonely walls, I'll keep you company. Hello, window. Well, I see that you're still here. Aren't you lonely? Since our darling disappeared. Well, look here, is that a teardrop in the corner of your pain? Now don't you try to tell me that it's rain. She went away and left us all along the way she planned. Guess we'll have to learn to get along without her if we can. Hello, ceiling. I'm gonna stare at you a while. You know I can't sleep. So won't you bear with me a while? We must all stick together, or else I'll lose my mind. I've got a feeling she'll be gone a long, long time.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. While coronavirus infections could go down over the next few months, we're still headed into flu season. Millions of Americans will be affected by the flu. But the good news is that we do have a safe and effective vaccine. But sadly, too many people go unvaccinated, especially African Americans. For more about flu vaccine, talk to your doctor or visit aawellnessproject.org. Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. Prostate cancer is the most common cancer for men. African American men are more at risk. That's primarily because it's often diagnosed when it's more advanced. The good news is that diagnosed early, most prostate cancer can be treated effectively. If you're a man over 50 or have a family history of prostate cancer, talk to your doctor today about a test. For more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
If you talk, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
Stay tuned after the announcements. It'll be time for a new feature here on WRCT Pittsburgh called The Black Diamond Show. About an hour's worth of bluegrass. Y'all stay tuned.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Don't fall for it. Hang up, ignore them. Report this criminal activity to oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Did you know that Lyme disease is the most prevalent tick-borne illness, with about 220,000 new cases occurring each year? Believe it or not, you can test negative for Lyme and still be infected. Many victims of Lyme report never seeing a bullseye rash, and it can be very difficult to diagnose because it mimics other illnesses, such as multiple sclerosis, ALS, and Alzheimer's. To learn more, go to www.LymeDiseaseAssociation.org.
Attic Records joins you in supporting WRCT. Attic Records, located in Millvale, is open 7 days a week, providing new and used records and CDs. From metal to reggae, hip-hop to doo-wop, and all stops in between, Attic Records has the hottest new releases and all the older music you want. Family-owned and operated, Attic Records pays for quality used records and CDs with no collection too big or too small. You can visit Attic Records today or call them at 412-821-8484 and get the music you need. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, please email pr@wrct.org for more info about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. Tune into the Saturday Light Brigade, where host Larry Berger brings you acoustic music, puzzles, interviews, and live performances weekly on the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings on WRCT Pittsburgh. Do you remember what Top 40 radio sounded like in the 1970s? We don't, but Jay Thurber might. Say okay, Gen Xer, and tune in to Radio 9 from 12 to 3 p.m. Saturdays for your mix of oldies, newies, and snark here on Independent Freeform Radio, 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. Hey everybody, I'm Mando Richard, and welcome to the Black Diamond Show, an hour of bluegrass music that I know you will enjoy. I can't think of any better way to start off an hour of bluegrass music than with Bill Monroe. Here we go, Uncle Penn.
We'd like to do an old-timer for you here at the scenery. We hope you will enjoy. And this is wrote about the man that I learned to play from back in the hills of Kentucky, my Uncle Penn Vannevar. We titled this number, Uncle Penn. Would come from far away the next old night till the break of day when they called her a holler, Josie Doe, you knew Uncle Penn was ready to go. And in evening, about sundown, how the hill in the bush, Uncle Penn played a fiddle on the howard ring, you'd hear it talk, you'd hear it sing. Soldier Joy, and one he called Boston Boy, the greatest of all, what Jenny Lynn, and that's where fiddling begins. Hanging in and about some down, howling, doing it, but all the things made you feel on how it rang, you'd hear it talk, you'd feel